Right. Hello, guys. This is Sander and Mike on behalf of Bucks Nation. The first podcast in a while. We're going to be talking about a couple of things today, mostly Aqib Talib and a bunch of draft-related stuff. So we'll lead in with Talib. The big news was that he was charged with a misdemeanor instead of a felony, but Joe Bucks fan then came back on that, corrected their story. It still looks pretty good for Talib, but nothing's official yet, so there's no saying what's going to happen.
Looks good legally, but Goodell's going to come down on him, just as he does everyone else. So yeah, there's definitely going to be some sort of suspension. I'm thinking like a 4 to 6 game suspension, and then get knocked down, just kind of like Roethlisberger had, get knocked down based on behavior.
Yeah, there's no way I see him starting this season.
Yeah, because I'm not sure if the Bucks are interested in keeping him around. One small mishap from him, and he's going to be done for a season or longer. So I don't know if the Bucks want to take that risk with the money they're paying him.
Yeah, I keep going back and forth on it because the money isn't that big the next 2 years, but it's still pretty bad, and the guy's a phenomenal cornerback. So if you lose him, you lose a big part of the defense.
And the Bucks, I mean, with Barber retiring, aren't getting any younger in the secondary. And if I'm the coach, I'm not comfortable starting the season with Barber and Biggers or Barber and whoever else they want to plug into that role and pretend that they're adequate. Most of them are hardly adequate at nickelback, in my opinion.
I think they can make it work with Biggers. They did for a couple games last season. But the opposition wasn't terrific then either. And you get a real problem at nickelback if Myron Lewis doesn't develop and you have to plug in Albert Mack.
There's a depth issue in general at cornerback. Yeah. And you take Talib out of that picture and the starting level drops from an elite talent to mediocre at best, in my opinion.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. The Bucks have to add someone there in the draft, at least. Even if they keep Talib, they need to add some depth somewhere late in the draft.
So, but isn't that kind of what they've been doing, is they just keep adding these mid-round draft pick cornerbacks who are okay, but they're not going to – none of them are starter worthy. I know it's not the Bucks' strategy year after year to go after big-name free agents, but if there's a time, I think it's probably now instead of just keep taking risk on unproven third, fourth, fifth-round rookies.
That's true. There's a couple of good talents out there. Obviously, Nnamdi Asamoah, he's the best cornerback available. Then you got Jonathan Joseph, who's pretty good himself. And a couple other guys who could fill in pretty well.
It will be interesting to see if this affects their draft plan at all. Instead of going after a third to fifth round cornerback, if they go after a first or second, but then you're also, which we'll get into in a minute, but you're also taking picks away from other needs. The Bucks' list of needs is fairly substantial at this point.
Yeah. And the problem is too that there's no real late first round cornerback they could pick. They could pick Jimmy Smith, but he has a bunch of off field problems too. So if they want to get rid of Talib, picking Jimmy Smith doesn't make a lot of sense.
I'd be hard pressed to think they go after Smith. Even Smith is a very good cornerback, but even then, I don't know how much he separates himself from a Brandon Harris or. I mean, Patrick Peterson's going to be out of the question. He's going to go in top 10, but players of that caliber.
Yeah, I think he's a bit better, but if you get, like, Brandon Harris, the biggest knock against him is that he's just small. And, I mean, the Bucks can live with some smaller corners. They can work around it. They've done so before, so.
And they got away with Rondae Barber for how long now, so.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised to see a Brandon Harris pick in the first, or even if they can trade up in the second and snag him.
Yeah, that could happen. Yeah. But still, what I could also see them do is try to trade Talib for something. I mean, they can't do it this draft unless the CBA gets resolved really quickly. But, like, during the season...
Do they have leverage at that point? I don't know that they have enough leverage to get much out of him.
Well, if they're not going to want to keep him, they're going to want something in return to fill that spot. So then they could trade him.
Well, I guess they could. I'm just saying, I don't know if they have the leverage. Teams know they're going to dump him because of the character issues. Why waste a pick or a player on instead of just waiting for him to fall to free agency?
Yeah, that's true. You could see the same thing with Antonio Cromartie, I think. He was traded for like a third-round pick to the Jets with just a year left on his contract. So that's not a lot of... That's not a lot to get for a first-round pick.
And Talib is a different talent. He just comes with the baggage.
Yeah, that's true. He's a better cornerback than Antonio Cromartie.
Absolutely. So moving on to the needs of the Bucs, what do you think the top needs are?
Well, the top need is defensive end. There's no question about that. They have to get a better pass rusher on the edge than what they have now, which is... With White, a free agent, they have Michael Bennett. That's it. Yeah. That's the only guy.
It's not good. I agree that defensive end's a top need, but I go back and forth whether the value's there or not, or if this group of defensive end has just kind of been lumped in a first round because of the lack of high-end talent in this draft, which I don't think this draft is. Front end loaded as much as it is deep.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Well, with the exception of like Von Miller and Robert Quinn, but the Bucs have basically no shot at getting those two.
Right. Yeah, I mean they're going to go top 10, top 15 at the very worst.
Yeah. But I mean, there are some really good talents, or at least solid players, like Ryan Kerrigan, who's never going to be spectacular, but you know he's not going to be horrible either.
I just kind of feel like that about all the defensive ends, that none of them are going to be spectacular. Cameron Jordan's got a lot of upside. I think J.J. Watt's got a lot of upside. I don't know that J.J. Watt necessarily fits our scheme as much as a Cameron Jordan. Justin Houston's another guy who's kind of one of those tweeners that doesn't really fit our scheme but has a lot of upside. I just don't know that any of them are spectacular value picks at 20. But then again, you look at a draft board and not many spectacular value picks that low.
Yeah, that's true. Well, and there are a lot of players who could be really good at left defensive end, but who really couldn't work as a pass rusher against left tackles, like J.J. Watt and Cameron Jordan and probably Adrian Claiborne.
Which is kind of what the Bucs need. The Bucs need to improve their pass rush. McCoy and Price will eat up those blockers, but I think to expect McCoy to become an elite pass rusher from the defensive tackle position is a little unfair. He's not, it's going to tick off a lot of Bucs fans, but he's not Warren Sapp. He's not going to change the position to a pass rushing position. I think he's very good at pass rushing for what he is, but is he going to suffice for the entire team? Probably not. You need to add something off the edge.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, McCoy has a ton of talent, and he can be a real impact player at defensive tackle, but one defensive tackle isn't going to make a pass rush.
All right.
That's just not going to happen.
I mean, even Warren Sapp had some very good talent around him.
Yeah, absolutely.
To get speed off the edge, and I mean, Warren Sapp changed that position, in my opinion, but I don't know that it's fair to expect McCoy to become Warren Sapp.
No, it is. I mean, Warren Sapp is a first ballot Hall of Famer.
Right.
And you can't expect that of any drafted player at all.
Agree.
So, well, another thing you could see the Bucs do at defensive end is try for one of those base defensive ends, like Cameron Jordan, in the first round. And that the cry to get a pass rusher later in the draft, like someone who will take a while to develop. but could at least make an impact in the longer run.
I think Jordan, again, it's going to be, we're just talking that it's kind of useless to do mock drafts, in my opinion, just because it's kind of a crapshoot. But if Jordan does fall, I think that's going to be a hard player to pass up, even with a Kerrigan sitting there, even with, I don't know, even with some other guys sitting there. I think Jordan provides probably a little bit more potential than say, Claiborne or Kerrigan. Or again, I don't think J.J. Watt falls that far, and I don't know that he necessarily fits a scheme either, but or a J.J. Watt type.
Yeah, but I do get the feeling that Rhea Morris likes to mold his defense around the players rather than have the players molded to the defense. So if he can get a player like Cameron Jordan or like J.J. Watt, he'll change his defense around a bit to fit them in.
I don't disagree, but I think there's a difference between molding your defense around players and completely switching your defense. I don't think J.J. Watt's going to be someone that you just plug in at defensive end in a 4-3 scheme and expect a whole lot out of him. I mean, just like in the Keem Ayers or who are some of those other kind of stand-up ends.
Justin Houston.
Justin Houston.
Yeah, those you could just plug in and you could have them stand up if that works better for them, but that doesn't really matter much. But J.J. Watt, you're right, he's a completely different kind of player from those guys.
So where do you think the Bucks' next move will be? As far as, I guess, what do you think the Bucks' draft strategy might look like? Instead of predicting who they're going to pick, what do you think they go from there?
Well, I think they go with the best rated defensive end on their board. Like, doesn't matter if it's a pass rusher or whether they want him to play base end. They just need a lot of defensive end talent. But once they get past that, or there's really no one on their board they could pick, I think they start to look at linebacker or offensive line to start to fill in holes. Because linebacker's really thin. They only have 3 guys under contract right now.
Linebacker is a position I think you can get a lot of value for in the second round as well. You're not going to get a guy who – you're going to get more of a one-dimensional guy, but I think that's okay if you plug him into a system with a good defensive coordinator like Raheem. But if you plug him into a middle linebacker position and ask him to do one thing, you're looking at, I think, a plethora of talent.
That's true.
In the second round.
There's a lot of linebackers who could fall a bit in the second round. Like, well, Martez Wilson, he's pretty intriguing, if a bit raw. Bruce Carter, who's injured but really talented. So he'd fall because he probably couldn't contribute in his first year, but he's a really big talent.
You also look at a guy like... one guy I think is kind of intriguing and... might be a home run pick is someone like Greg Jones. He's a run-stopping linebacker. He's not going to be able to drop back in his zone very well. You're going to have to switch up the traditional Tampa 2 where the middle linebacker gets deep and ask Black or Hayes to do that a little bit more. But Jones is a big guy, gets physical, and I think a team that struggles against the run a little bit, it's obviously been one of the biggest criticisms of Root is he's not physical enough, doesn't get off blocks well, which, fair or not, it is certainly the perception of him. Greg Jones is someone that can compensate for that. And then you want to go a little bit speedier, maybe more of a pass defense middle linebacker, someone like Quan Sturdivant, who I really like. I think Sturdivant has a lot of upside. I think both Jones and Sturdivant will be around when the Bucks make their second round selection.
Yeah. One of them has a chance to drop to the third round selection even. It kind of depends on how everything turns out. But a lot of those linebackers are all over the board too. so it's tough to get a grip on where each one is going.
Irving's a guy that Nate Irving, I think, is a guy that will be there in third round. So, I mean, the Bucks have some more play in the second round, so where do you think they end up deciding to do?
I think you get a linebacker in round two, because I think all the pass rushers, all the really good pass rushers are going to be gone, including Sherrod. I don't see Jabal Sherrod dropping that far. So there's not a lot of choice that way, and they need more linebackers. They need someone to make an impact at that position.
I agree. Although I think because you have a little bit more play with some linebackers, especially inside linebackers, who I think you can get more value for in the second and third round. I think they almost look at just going best player available in the second round, whether it's a corner, whether it's a linebacker. You mentioned offensive line.
Yeah.
I would say it's defensive end first round, and I think it's probably best player available regardless of position. Even regardless of need to some extent, I don't think they're going to draft a defensive tackle, but even going after a wide receiver who stands out at that position, or I don't think they get running back until later in the round in the draft, but safety, something like that. I wouldn't be shocked to see them just take best player available, and I think that's probably what they'll be looking at doing.
Yeah, I can see that, especially at maybe even at some crazy position like wide receiver. If someone like Titus Young is there, someone with really good home run speed, he could really add something to the Bucs offense.
Hankerson could potentially be there. I think Hankerson would complement Williams pretty well.
Yeah, I don't know if he has the speed to really separate himself from Ben and Briscoe, though.
I mean, Briscoe's... I don't think Briscoe's much of a player, to be honest.
Well, I didn't see much of him. Obviously, no one did. But I liked what I saw. Kind of a bit of a bigger wide receiver who could box out some people. But I don't know if Leonard Hankerson is much more than that. But I haven't looked really closely at the wide receivers either.
And moving on, you think there's any other big needs they're going to look to fill? Or would you be shocked to see them go free agency? Would you see them trading up at all? I know you wrote a couple of posts about them potentially trading up or trading down.
Yeah, I can see them trading up. I mean, they've traded up before in both previous drafts for Freeman in the first round and for Ben in the second round. So if they see a player dropping and he gets within five picks or something where they have to give up a late round pick to get him, I think they do that pretty quickly too. They're not afraid to spend like a fifth or sixth round pick to make sure they get the player they like.
So, moving on, what kind of offensive lineman do you think they're going to look to fill? You think they're going to try to get a tackle, or would you be shocked to see them take a mid-round pick on an offensive lineman and look to plug someone like that into a starting lineup, or just kind of groom them?
I think they want to plug someone in pretty quickly. If they draft someone, that probably means they're not re-signing Davin Joseph or Jeremy Trueblood, depending on the exact position. So they want him to step in immediately and fill that need. Because if they draft a third-round guard, why would they want to re-sign Joseph then?
You look like someone like Marcus Cannon, whose stock has kind of dropped a little bit at TCU. I mean, he's a big body, a big tackle.
Really big.
6'6", I think he's like 340, 350 in that range. Big guy, might be able to step in and play tackle immediately. I think if you're looking to dump Trueblood, I think you're looking for an immediate starter somewhere in the second or third round.
Yeah, well, I really like Marcus Cannon because he's big, he's physical. And he can step in at both guard and tackle, so it gives him a bit of versatility too.
Trueblood stepped up his game, but plugging someone like that in, you might lose a little bit in the short term, but gain a little bit more in the longer term. And I think a pick like that, I don't think Solder drops to second round. I don't see the Bucks taking a tackle in the first round, but I'm trying to think of some other guys. Maybe Anthony Costanzo out of Boston College, if he drops at all. But
yeah,
I think they're gonna, if they're gonna take a tackle in the second or third round, they're gonna look for someone that's starter capable. To be able to plug in immediately. Guard, I think you have a little bit more play with, and I think you can get away with a little bit more guard and kind of groom them.
Yeah, they have some players at guard, so they don't immediately need someone to fill in, even if they don't re-sign Joseph, because the line isn't horrible. But I think they'd still prefer to get someone who could step in immediately. I think they're going to let their re-signing of people be determined by who they get in the draft, too. So you figure,
this lockout is really getting kind of old, because you don't know what kind of play the Bucks are going to make as far as free agency and what they're going to do with their own players. They're just dragging their feet because of the lockout. So this certainly isn't doing justice for anyone.
Yeah, that's true, and it does give the Bucks a lot more opportunities to just select the best player on the board. Because they haven't needed to decide on re-signing Joseph or re-signing Trueblood or re-signing any of the linebackers. So if they come out of the draft and they suddenly end up with three extra linebackers, they're not going to re-sign Quincy Black or Barrett Roode. But if they don't end up selecting any linebackers, they're going to go after those guys and make sure they're re-signed.
It's a good point. It does certainly give them some wiggle room to their signings. I at this point, I don't see them bringing Roode back. I do like Roode, always have. I think he's a very good player, but I don't know that they're looking to bring him back with the flaws that he does have and how they kind of stand out.
Yeah, I agree with that. I also don't think they really value middle linebacker very highly, so they're not willing to pay a lot of money to get him back. And they do have Tyrone McKenzie on board, who I know they like, but, well, you never know how they're going to do once they're thrown into the fire.
I would say that, just complete side note, but I think this is probably going to be one of the lowest rated drafts in recent history with the lockout. I think interest in it hasn't been drummed up as much as the NFL would hope, and I think the NFL is going to get their first little taste of the damage that a lockout does do to the league. And hopefully it's a wake-up call for the future. They don't think they're invincible and get away with months of no, in theory, months of no football.
Yeah, because there's really not a lot to talk about. Once the draft is over, you'll really see a drop back in any kind of interest, because there's nothing to talk about then. There's no training camp, there's no players developing, there's no free agency, there's no trades, there's absolutely nothing.
So you talked about the Bucks maybe going after a late round running back. You have anyone in mind of who that might be, or any guys you really like that might stick out in round four through seven, really?
Well, one back I really like is Johnny White. Out of North Carolina, but I don't think he's more than a 6th or 7th round pick. But he's a great pass blocker, and he's a great pass catcher. He's not really explosive, but he'd function real well in the Bucs offense as a third down back.
Which is really what they need. It will be interesting to see what Blount can become. He had certainly some great plays and some highlight reel, jumps and touchdowns and breaking the big run. But for a bigger guy that is kind of labeled as a physical running back, you're a little shocked when you look at the numbers and how bad he was in short yardage.
Yeah.
They might need a guy who can just pound it for 2 yards, 3 yards at a time.
Yeah, absolutely. Because, well, there's a chance Blunt improves and all that with more coaching and more experience. But there's no off-season. He can't read anything. He can't do anything right now. So there won't be any improvement until he gets to some kind of training camp.
And you really have to. One of my problems with the whole Freeman thing originally was the Bucks were kind of banking on development, which is always kind of a scary thing because you don't know how a guy is going to develop. You don't know if he will and how quickly he will. And when the Bucks, you know, essentially sell the farm to get Freeman and design their whole team around one guy that you have no idea how they're going to develop, it's a scary thing. And so to be able to forecast your running game and say that Blunt's going to develop, especially with no offseason, like you mentioned, doesn't do anyone favors if he doesn't. Then you're stuck with no one behind him. And so I absolutely agree with you. I think they're going to go for a mid to late round running back. Even someone that's quicker that might not be, you know, as high profile, but someone like Darrell Scott or Noel Devine or something like that, still a little change of pace back as well, might be able to be okay for a fifth round pick.
Yeah, the Bucks need
Cooper can get out of the backfield and out of Miami and get out of the backfield and do some pretty spectacular things as well. And he's I'm looking at a draft board right now that has him like the 16th rated running back. So I mean, it's definitely a fifth round pick.
Yeah, there's a lot of change of pace back guys in this draft. Like you can go pretty far down and still find guys who can make some plays. Like the one draft board I have here has Evan Royster at 29th or so, and he could do some damage. Players like that are all over the board. So you could definitely get a late round running back who could fill in and complement Blunt.
I guess we'll finish off with just kind of the first round defensive end possibilities, because obviously the first round's the money round, and especially this year with a potential rookie wage scale taking place, you can take a little bit more of a flyer and not risk as much. So out of the first round ends, who do you think is probably has the most upside, and who do you think the Bucks would put highly on their board?
But the highest upside of the first round, who the Bucks have a realistic shot at getting, is probably Alden Smith. Because I really like Alden Smith. He's got long arms. He's the typical New York Giant pass rusher kind of guy. But he's really raw, and he'll take a long time to develop. But once he does, he could be a terror. And I've seen some people say he could stick. He'd have to stick at left defensive end. But I think he can be a terrific pass rusher even from that position, so that wouldn't even matter that much.
He's very long too, so
yeah.
A long always helps a pass rusher with a big wingspan.
Yeah, physically he looks a lot like Jason Pierre-Paul, who the Giants drafted last year. Just huge arms and a lot of athletic ability. Just jumps off the tape.
Who do you think we just talked about how stupid it was to predict a pick, but who do you think the Bucks have high on their draft board that if they will fall, that they'll take? So you like Alden Smith? Do you think Bucks have him up there on their draft board?
I really don't know. I have no idea what they think about Alden Smith. I can get a feeling for most of these players, but not for him. He's a complete mystery. I hope they have him high on the draft board. At least if I'm right, that is. But I know a couple of players they have to like Ryan Kerrigan, because they want people with who are team captains, who hustle, who study, and that's Ryan Kerrigan. That's Cameron Jordan too. So those are two players they have to like.
Yeah, I mean, I think if Cameron Jordan's there, that they don't pass on him. I think Cameron Jordan's probably one of the highest on their board. He's explosive, can shed blocks pretty well, which I think the Bucks lack a little bit on the defensive line. McCoy certainly improved at it, but was still young. And I think he's got a few good moves that he can use. I don't think he has the elite speed that they necessarily want, but the guys that I think do possess that elite speed lack in more areas than the Bucks are willing to take. And I've seen a few mock drafts, for what it's worth. It's kind of silly, but for what it's worth is have Daquan Bowers falling to the mid-teens to late teens, and I think that if that's the case, the Bucks, you talked about trading up, I think the Bucks might look at trading up and snagging him if he starts to fall past 11, 12 area. I think the Bucks look at trading up a little bit for that one.
Yeah, I'll agree with that, but it also depends on the medical information, because if he starts falling, that probably means a couple teams don't like what they've seen on his knee. So it'll really depend on whether the Bucks can live with, in whatever state his knee is.
Yeah, I'm not someone who's going to put a whole lot of value in that.
It's all just rumors now, so it's impossible to know.
Right. Well, I think that's going to do it.
Yeah, I think it was a pretty good podcast. We've gone through a lot of different information, different scenarios, different things.
Well, we appreciate you guys listening. We'll keep doing a couple more, maybe right after the draft and kind of dissect some picks that Bucks made. And hope you enjoy the draft and keep following Bucks Nation for coverage on the draft and for the team.
Okay. Thank you, guys.